Okay, so we need to talk about sugar. Sugar can be very bad for you, and it's in everything. It's even in ketchup. No, wait a minute, wrong sugar. I mean the TV show Sugar with Colin Farrell on Apple TV that I'm obsessed with. So there's a major twist that's revealed at the end of the sixth episode, and I actually predicted the twist around episode three. I won't reveal what happens. You got to check it out. We'll discuss it later at some point. But anyway, I was telling my good friend Philbrook, he also watches the show, and I said I had predicted the twist. And he was like, oh, bullshit. And I said, why would I lie to you? You're one of my best friends. You think I'm pathetic or something? I would lie to a friend about this? And then I heard his son in the background. He said, yes. But anyway, I got my mom on the phone with him and his son, and she verified that I predicted it. So there. And quickly, everyone's been asking me to weigh in on the Kendrick Lamar Drake beef. Of course, no one has. What the hell do I know about those guys? I don't know anything about their music. Rap for me ended after Eric B. and Rakim because it was like, okay, they perfected it. But anyway, I did a little bit of research and I'm on Team Kendrick Lamar for sure. First of all, Drake is a weird looking dude. He's not attractive by any means. And there's a video of him with some girl on stage at a concert and stuff. And he's kind of grabbing all over her and stuff. And then at the end of it, he's like, oh, how old are you? He's like, oh, I don't want to go to jail. It's like, you ask him that at the beginning, you dumb shit. But anyway, he sounds like a sleaze. I have no idea about the allegations. You know, maybe he'll end up in a cell with R. Kelly and his soon-to-be cellmate, P. Diddy. Okay, today's podcast theme. As Shakespeare so eloquently said, to pay or not to pay? That is the question. Or something like that. Anyway, yeah, you know, like toupee, like wig, you get it? So anyway, let's talk about some decent toupees, some bad ones, and some movies and stuff.
You are my density. You are my density.
I just paid $2 for a wig. It was a small price to pay. So let's talk about hair, or lack thereof. Now, my hair kind of sucks. Let's mention that up front. Right up front, because up front it sucks. No, Jesus, I would never wear a toupee, though. I mean, unless it was for like a comedic reason or something. And I remember when I was a kid, my dad would always say like, oh my God, what a bad toupee on that guy. And I'd be like, how can you tell? But now that I'm not a complete dumb shit, I can spot fake hair pretty well. And look, I get it. A man's ego and confidence can be affected by his hair. But Jesus, have a good personality, be funny, genuine, and do the best you can with your hair. And hey, if you have millions of dollars and you want a good-looking transplant, then go for it. But you'll continue to shed hair, and those transplants require maintenance. So you're kind of like a dog chasing his tail at some point. And that's sometimes why someone's hair will look good. And then several years later, it's like, huh, now it looks like shit. And then it'll be, you know, then they'll fix it. And it's like, oh, it's kind of good again, but weird. Anyway, okay, let's talk about Al Pacino, okay? And he's open about his hair loss. But you want to check out some great hair. Check out the movie Serpico, the 1973 classic directed by Sidney Lumet, where Pacino plays a kind of an idealistic New York City cop who's shunned by the other officers because he won't take bribes, and all of them are. It's a classic movie, and Al Pacino's got a great head of hair in it. And incredibly, the movie was shot in reverse. So the movie that you're watching actually starts with a fresh-faced Al Pacino just starting the police force. And his hair and his beard gets longer as the film progresses and as he loses his innocence and idealism. But they shot the movie in reverse, unbelievably. So Al Pacino had to start the movie basically at the end. And as they continued shooting, they would gradually cut his hair and beard off. So at the end of shooting, he was the freshly shaven conservative haircut dude from the beginning. And the amazing part is not only did he start filming the movie with all this hair, but it was kind of at the height of the drama of the movie. So as they keep shooting the movie, he had to kind of dip down his emotions because he gradually, you know, went from this high energy state to the more placid kind of like, oh, I'm a new cop. This is very cool. So it's like kind of impressive on many fronts. Another classic with Al Pacino, directed by, again, Sidney Lumet, is Dog Day Afternoon from 1975. Based on a true story, Al Pacino plays a dumb shit criminal who tries to rob a bank so his lover can get a sex change. Al Pacino's hair looks great in it. And there's kind of a fascinating and interesting documentary on John Wachowicz, or something like that. It's called The Dog from 2013, and he's the real-life inspiration for the movie Dog Day Afternoon. The guy is pretty damn interesting, and it's a good watch. And it has the cool song Amarina by Elton John in it. Check that out. And the guitar chords are kind of hard on this one, so I'll just sing a teeny bit of the chorus. And she dreams of crystal streams of days gone by when we would lean, laughing, fit to burst upon each other. And Al Pacino's wearing a, you know, decent toupee in 1983's Scarface, directed by Brian De Palma, which, of course, is a must-see. And Al Pacino's toupee in Sea of Love from 1989 is actually decent enough, but wow, what a great movie. Al Pacino's a detective investigating murders. He gets involved with Ellen Barkin, the possible suspect, directed by the man, Harold Becker. Totally awesome. That's a must-see. But yeah, his hair is looking good, ish. But Pacino's toupee started getting a little weird in the 1991 Gary Marshall movie Frankie and Johnny, which was based on the play Frankie and Johnny in the Clair de Lune. I remember in acting class, I did a scene from the play where me and the actress had supposedly just had sex, and I was just so nervous. But I think I did okay. But yeah, those kind of scenes are pretty hard for me. Like if I'm doing something, you know, kind of stupid, then I can, you know, do that pretty easily because that's, you know, that's the way I roll. And it's funny, in the bigger budget movies, Pacino's hair is usually passable. The more low budget ones, like let's say 2007's thriller 88 Minutes, directed by John Avnet, Pacino plays a professor who gets a call telling him he has like 88 minutes left to live. But yeah, Pacino's hair is kind of an immovable object. It almost looks like some kind of animal is sitting on top of his head. And the movie is not great, but hey, it's 88 minutes long, so there you go. Al Pacino's hair is generally worse, though, when he does interviews or out about in daily life. I think maybe because he doesn't have someone to, like, you know, style it. So he wears just some crazy big hair pieces at times. It looks a little silly, but I love the guy, so I can't fault him. And ironically, Al Pacino played Phil Spector in the appropriately titled HBO movie Phil Spector, written and directed by the talented but annoying David Mamet. And Phil Spector had one of the worst toupees ever known to man. And you got to check out his bald prison photo. He looks like Gollum or the Crypt Keeper or something. Phil Spector was a legendary music producer and creator of the Wall of Sound, kind of like doubling and tripling some of the instruments to create like a really full, rich tone, famously used on the Beatles' Let It Be from 1970, All Things Must Pass by George Harrison from 1970, and End of the Century, Ramones, 1980. Here's a little bit of What Is Life from George Harrison's All Things Must Pass. What I feel, I can't say, but my love is there for you any time of day. But if it's not love that you need, then I'll try my best to make everything succeed. Phil Spector lived in a notorious creepy castle on top of a hill in Alhambra, California. It was named the Pyrenees Castle. On the tragic night of February 2nd, 2003, Phil Spector ate at the West Hollywood fixture Dan Tana's, kind of an old school Italian red sauce joint. Interesting place, tons of history. It's kind of a pain in the ass to go to, though. Phil Spector then went to the House of Blues, and there he met Lana Clarkson, who was at the front of the VIP room. She worked there. She made the mistake of leaving with the sleaze bag and went back to his mansion, and he later shot her and killed her. Spector was convicted of her murder in 2009. He died from COVID in 2021 at a prison in Stockton. So, hey, COVID did at least one good thing for us. Let's talk a little bit about John Travolta. John Travolta just had a tremendous head of hair in Randall Kleiser's Grease from 1978. Jeez, it's an impressive hairdo. I think he still had some pretty quality hair in the goofy before-mentioned exercise movie Perfect from 1985. By the time we get to 1995's Barry Sonnenfeld's movie Get Shorty, co-written by the badass writer Elmore Leonard, Travolta is rocking a fairly goofy toupee of some kind. Travolta's hair meets peak goofiness in 2001's Swordfish, kind of an okay but not great kind of CIA computer hacker spy movie. Travolta occasionally will shave his head, and kind of in the late, more recent movies he's done, he's been bald, and he does have kind of a weirdly shaped head, but, you know, I think he looks pretty damn good. Frank Sinatra had legendary rugs, as toupees are called, because it looks like a rug is lying on your head. For an early rug, check out 1967's Tony Rome, a corny detective movie with Sinatra and his hair playing ex-cop turned private eye Tony Rome. And for a later toupee flavor, check out The First Deadly Sin, which I mentioned before, from 1980, where Sinatra plays a police inspector nearing retirement, trying to find a serial killer. It's kind of an enjoyable movie, to be honest, but his hair looks a little weird. Okay, let's talk about one of my absolute favorite actors, Burt Reynolds, whose hair started thinning fairly early, and he was fully on board the toupee train early in his career. And he kind of made it work for a while. And Burt Reynolds just can crack me up. He's got the best reactions, and he seemed like a legit, clever, funny, and charismatic guy. Burt was wearing a toupee as early as 1975's Hustle, directed by Robert Aldrich and starring Catherine Deneuve. He plays a cop investigating a suicide. It's an interesting movie with kind of just a tragic, tear-inducing ending. It's dated, obviously, but I was really surprised by it. And just the classic, ridiculous comedy, The Cannonball Run from 1981, directed by the stuntman become director Hal Needham. It's about a bunch of goofballs in an illegal cross-country road race. It's got Dom DeLuise, who occasionally transforms into the heroic Captain Chaos, Farrah Fawcett, Roger Moore, Dean Martin, Adrian Barbeau, Sammy Davis Jr., Jackie Chan. Jesus, ton of people in this one. I will never forget this first Cannonball Run because I was visiting my parents' friends, and at the time, you know, I was a teeny kid, and this kind of studly high school dude who was like my parents' friend's son, he was like, you want to go to the movies? So we went to the movies to see Cannonball Run, and we got there early, and we walked in to check out a little bit of this other movie, which turned out to be Blake Edwards' movie SOB from 1981 also, obviously. It's got William Holden, Larry Hagman, who played TV's JR from the TV show Dallas, and Julie Andrews, famously from The Sound of Music, as a family-friendly actress who gets involved in an erotic thriller. And I'm not sure if I'd actually seen any boobs yet, maybe National Geographic, but luckily, when we walked in to see a part of the movie, it was the part where Julie Andrews goes topless. And I did have this, like, strange sensation when I saw boobs. I was like, I didn't understand it yet, but I was like, those are kind of interesting. I completely love the cop thriller Sharky's Machine from 1981, directed by Burt Reynolds. It's got Rachel Ward, the villainous and creepy Henry Silva, and Charles Durning. It has a cool, gritty feel to it, and Burt's toupee is passable. I love detective movies, noir stuff, and it's just prime Burt Reynolds. Another enjoyable revenge movie is called Stick from 1985, also directed by Burt, co-written again by the awesome Elmore Leonard, with Candace Bergen and George Segal. It's corny but enjoyable, with a passable but not great toupee on Burt. One of the last bordering on passable toupees was 1986's Heat. Sorry, Buckley, it's not the Michael Mann movie Heat. It's got Karen Young, written by Mr. Screenwriting himself, William Goldman. Him of Butch Cassidy screenwriting fame and shit, All the President's Men and many others. Burt Reynolds plays a bodyguard. It ain't great, but it's set in Vegas, which I kind of love. Burt has a slightly larger toupee on, which kind of accentuates its goofiness. Sometimes less is more, as they say. And by 1987's movie Malone, with Burt as an ex-CIA hitman that visits a small town controlled by mercenaries, Burt's toupee has just jumped the shark. It's like too much hair or too low of a hairline. The movie Malone is ultra corny, with Cliff Robertson as the villain, and it's got Cynthia Gibb, who was just an absolute cutie and I was in love with at the time. Another goofy one with goofy hair from 1987 is Rent-A-Cop, with Burt Reynolds and Liza Minnelli. She plays a prostitute, he plays a cop, and they team up. It's directed by Jerry London. It also has the cool James Remar as the villain. Again, it's a very corny movie, but there is something like so comforting about it. But yeah, from that point on, there was no salvaging Burt's hair. The toupees only got worse and worse. He kept his charisma and charm until the end, though, and he was a serious, big-time fucking movie star, man. You know, they don't make them like him anymore. Rest in peace, Burt Reynolds. He's buried at Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And speaking of just embracing the bald head, Bruce Willis, Ed Harris, and Jason Statham, they all look great, man, with their bald heads. And speaking of Ed Harris, he was in the HBO show Westworld, which was based on the 1973 Western sci-fi movie Westworld, directed by Michael Crichton, with Yul Brynner, who was one of the OG bald motherfuckers. He had been losing his hair for a bit, and he shaved his head for The King and I, and then he said, fuck it, I'm going to keep it shaved. My man Stephen Malkmus from Pavement has a song about Yul Brynner on his solo album from 2001 entitled Stephen Malkmus. It's got a cool soundbite from Yul Brynner at the beginning of the song. And in a funny way, the shaving of my head has been a liberation from a lot of stupid vanities, really. It has simplified everything for me. It has opened a lot of doors, maybe. I'm not who you think I am. I'm the king of Siam. I've got a bald head, my name is Yul Brynner, and I am a famous movie star. The 1976 kind of crap sequel to Westworld is Future World with Yul Brynner again, along with Peter Fonda. I remember I was going into a sushi place on Sawtelle. It's called Hidei Sushi. Hidei Sushi. I knew I was going to say fucking Hidei Sushi. But anyway, Hidei Sushi. And so, he was leaving and I was coming in. We held the door open for each other and kind of, you know, locked eyes for a minute. Just I don't know what it was, but it was just kind of an interesting moment between us. And it kind of was like, I was almost like flashing forward to my future. He's like 6'2"-ish. I'm 6'3". And not that we look similar, but anyway, he was just kind of aging well. And I was like, maybe you are me in the future or something like that. But anyway, it was a cool little moment. And he had some charisma about him for sure. But anyway, speaking of Peter Fonda, he was also in the goofy 2007 movie Ghost Rider with Nicolas Cage, Nicolas Cage has a whopper of a lousy toupee in this one. It's a corny movie, but it's got some appeal. Quickly on Nicolas Cage, my mom and I watched the Alan Parker movie Birdie from 1984 with Nicolas Cage and Matthew Modine. Matthew Modine is kind of a weird guy obsessed with birds and flying, and him and Nicolas Cage come back from the Vietnam War, and Matthew Modine is in like a psych hospital having shut himself off completely, and Nicolas Cage is his friend who tries to bring him back to the real world. It's admittedly on the quite slow side, so you have to be in the right mood. But it's pretty touching, and Nicolas Cage is pretty great in it. I love Matthew Modine, and the ending is kind of fun, kind of surprising. Now let's speak briefly of Matthew McConaughey. He of the Regenix hair product, which is 100% bullshit. Check out his police photo. He got arrested for playing the bongos naked and stoned. Check out his mugshot photo and how much hair loss he had already fucking had. And then magically, after he, you know, got millions of dollars and with some magic potion, the hair grows back. Oh, come on now, Matthew. No. It didn't grow back. And he does have a first-class hair transplant, no doubt. It kind of fluctuates, and he probably has to do work on it now and again. Like I said, you continue to lose hair in certain areas, so you got to transplant more, you know, with time. And man, I get it. I mean, his ego or whatever doesn't want, you know, to admit that he got a hair transplant, but everybody knows. Ben Affleck is a similar story. His transplant isn't quite as good as Matthew McConaughey's, but it's decent. But Affleck's hairline is so unnaturally straight. That's the problem with some of these transplants. It's almost like they put too much hair in. They overdo it. And it's almost like actors and Botox and fillers and stuff. You have to do it subtly. You can't overdo that shit to where it like draws attention to itself. It's like, okay, you got a lot of hair, but there's too fucking much, dude. Some of these guys don't have receding hairlines. They have advancing ones like Eddie Munster or some shit from the TV show The Munsters. And I don't really like talking about Elon Musk. He's an unfunny bore. But check out his hair in the PayPal days. Dude was nearly bald. Now that he's rich as hell, he had a major hair transplant done. It looks okay, but overall it looks kind of phony, and it definitely fluctuates. So yeah, I figure go with whatever hair you got, fuck it. Putting some foreign object on your head just seems so, well, foreign to me. It's hard to be genuine when you have some kind of dead animal sitting on top of your head. And if someone doesn't like you because you don't have hair, then fuck them. They're an idiot. It's what's in your head that matters, not what's on top of it, you know? A few funny quotes. Bruce Willis said, balding is God's way of showing you you're only human. He takes the hair off your head and puts it in your ears. And the legend Telly Savalas said, we're all born bald, baby. Telly Savalas was a character, man, tons of movies, and famously was TV's Kojak, a cynical, lollipop-sucking New York detective with the catchphrase, who loves you, baby? When I was a kid, my parents and I were visiting the Sheraton in Universal City, and we saw Telly Savalas and his family at breakfast. I didn't really know anything about him, but my dad was thrilled, so I was like, okay, this is cool. Remember this, okay? And Telly Savalas actually lived at that Sheraton, and he died there. They actually named the bar Telly's for a while there after Telly Savalas. Pretty cool stuff. And a slightly off-color quote from the bald-as-hell Billy Joel. Going bald isn't about losing your hair. It's about getting more head.